Ah, the sound of spring. The sandhill cranes are soaring in the thermals above us right now, trumpeting their call and alerting everyone in the Skeena region to stop and look up. These beautiful cranes are among the largest of North American birds, standing over 1 meter tall, and they have a wingspan of about 2 meters. What makes the sandhill crane unique is that they are ancient birds. Over thousands of years, they've evolved elaborate courtship rituals and a wide array of vocalizations. The flight behavior of cranes differs from that of swans and geese. During migration, which is largely by day, and during sunny weather, flocks of a few to several hundred birds frequently spiral upward on thermal updrafts, glide or flap for a distance, then spiral upward again. When flying in straight lines, they use a V formation, and distances between rest stops average about 250 kilometers, while their flight speeds range from 20 to 80 kilometers per hour, depending on wind speed and direction. The crane's snapping upstroke and slower downstroke distinguishes them from other long-legged, long-necked birds. Here in British Columbia, we usually see these cranes only during migration. Often, we're first alerted to the presence of these flocks flying high overhead by the sound of their 7 to 20-note loud rattle calls, sometimes referred to as a trumpeting or bugling, which have a rising or falling inflection when the birds are in flight. The age-old crane migrations through our province follow the same routes, use the same rest stops, and occur at the same time each year. Right now, we are lucky enough to enjoy the call of the sandhill cranes. And today, I'm speaking with a wildlife biologist, Sean Sharp, for a little bit of information about the anatomy of these birds, the uniqueness of their call, and also best places to see them in the Buckley Valley.
Hi. Well, my name is Sean Sharp, and I'm a biologist, wildlife biologist, and I've been living in the Smithers area on and off since about 1995. And worked at a whole range of things, everything from for the provincial government through private consulting, which I do these days.
Now, we're talking about sandhill cranes today, which I'm very excited about. And we seem to start to see them around, you know, like early to mid-April. What part of their migratory journey are we catching them at?
They're one of the bigger, more obvious migratory flocks of birds that we see. And they spend their winters down in sort of Texas and Mexico and some of the southern states. And they come all the way right up to the Northwest Territories from here and all across Canada and even into Siberia. So they have quite a journey, and they tend to come about the time that the wetlands are opening up in the north. So they start just at the edge of things. Like if you go about 2 hours north of here, there's still not much open water. It's mostly frozen. So they're kind of pushing the envelope, if you like, most years.
Typically, how many would we see passing over us in Smithers?
In Smithers area, we could see tens of thousands. In flocks, just a few days ago, there were well over 1,000 birds in the flock. And it's interesting because the flocks are usually collections of families, like the young birds from last year hang out with the parent birds right up until they reach their migratory grounds for the summer, and then they split up. But they often don't, the young ones don't breed for probably 5 to 7 years after. So they don't breed the next year. They're not like some of these smaller birds.
So what's the typical lifespan of a sandhill crane?
They're a long-lived bird. The oldest one, I think, was about 37 years old.
Wow.
So, yeah, it's it's kind of a neat bird that way. They, you know, like Canada geese, they mate for life. The pairs stick together for a long time, and if one dies, they will remate. But they make this journey every year for most of their lives. And the biggest threat they seem to face really is just wetland habitat, both here and in the south. So they were endangered and quite threatened in the 60s, but have recovered significantly. And I think the last estimate I saw is they were increasing about 4% per year.
Wow. Have there been noticeable changes in their patterns or their locations due to climate change?
Due to climate change, I think the thing about climate change is it's the variability. So as we get these really variable springs and falls, like more storms, colder spring temperatures, it can definitely influence them. But I don't think there's been any demonstrated effect on these birds yet, because they tend to come up with the major warm fronts that are pushing up from the south. And that's why we see them kind of squeezed into these couple of weeks, as we've had some nice warm air pushing up from the south and sunnier days and things like that. And so that they kind of do the timing of the migration with that. But spring conditions, if they're really variable and you get sudden snowstorms coming later than usual, you know, that can definitely put extra stress on them for sure. Mm-hmm. And in the south, of course, it's probably the opposite effects, you know, hotter than usual temperatures causing, you know, heat stress and drying up swamps and various things like that.
Yeah. When I hear their call, I'm like, I can hear it from inside my house without the windows open. So that beautiful trumpeting sound, is that one of the louder bird calls, or is there something special about their anatomy that allows the sound to travel so clearly?
Yeah, actually, they do have kind of a neat anatomy. Their trachea, like the wind, the pipe that lets the air in, basically, mm-hmm. they have an extra long one that actually can distend into the stomach region a bit, and it lets them get sort of that deeper resonance, and they even get some kind of harmonics and overtones, and that's part of the really spooky sound of their call. But it's a neat bird that way.
Yeah.
They're most known, actually. I mean, people have, I don't know if you've ever seen them, you know, on the ground and when they're mating that, but they do this incredible dance. Like they jump around and dance and really kind of neat. Their, you know, wings flapping and their heads pumping up and down and very energetic looking.
Oh, that's really cool. Where would they typically mate?
Basically, they mate all across North America in the north, so all of northern Canada, and most every province, I think. I can't remember if they're in all of the eastern. Yeah, I've seen them in Nova Scotia, so they go right through and then right up into the Northwest Territories, Nunavut, and the Yukon.
If you wanted to spot them, where would be a good place to sit and wait to see them landed, not necessarily flying?
Mm-hmm. Well, the spot where most of us have always kind of headed up to watch them is up the Kispiox Valley, just various, some of the farmlands and pasture lands through that area. They tend to settle down in there as a big stopover. Occasionally, even here, I've seen them just west, just sort of off of the fields as you head out of town heading west. But the most reliable place seems to be up the Kispiox Valley, a few of the big farms. And if you watch them in the evenings, they do these big spirals on the thermals in front of the mountains and then often kind of descend into the fields nearby just to rest.
Mm-hmm. So if you wanted to, then maybe up the Kispiox Valley and around like dusk is when you might be able to see them eating and maybe watering and resting.
Yeah, usually before it gets dark, they're coming down well before it's dark. Mm-hmm. When it starts to cool off, they don't have the thermals anymore, so they tend to drop down and settle in for the night.
Yeah, they're smart. They're high efficiency birds. They're like the Teslas of birds. What's the coolest fact or your favorite thing about sandhill cranes?
Well, I just think they're such a harbinger of spring. I mean, the fact that, you know, when you hear that sound, you know, spring is here. It's not going to be much longer that we have to wait in the snow and the cold. Yeah. And it's just neat because they often have mixed flocks too. So we see a bunch of other things flying with them, like snow geese and you know, even occasionally swans will be mixed in with the big flocks that are flying overhead. So it really is like, oh, the gate is burst. They're heading north.
Before I go, is there anything that I didn't ask that you think is important for people to know?
I guess just you asked earlier about the climate change concerns, and I think that plus the habitat change, you know, just the importance of wetlands and having these areas that the birds can winter, and the fact that we have to look after them over their whole range, not just one area. Mm-hmm. You know, and they're not alone. There's so many other birds that you know, use the same habitats. And the more we can kind of minimize our impacts on climate change and keep the habitat that we have, the better things are for them.
Yeah, absolutely. And us, yeah, everyone, all of the things. Okay. Thank you so much, Sean, for speaking with me today.
Oh, you're most welcome.